life might hand you budgets, schedules, family, and responsibility, but driving shouldn't be just another chore.
We're here to help you find a car you love. Something that fits your budget and your needs, but is fun to drive and makes you look back. I'm Todd.
I'm Paul, and this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate.
We had our local Cars and Coffee this morning.
We did. It was pretty cool. It's becoming quite a thing.
It's becoming actually a big thing.
Huge turnout.
And I don't mean this. I really don't mean what I'm about to say to be the least bit tacky. It is a car show for adults.
Yeah, and I'm glad of that.
I don't mean
actually
that to be tacky, but sometimes it becomes an all one make, or they're all stanced, or they're all this model.
It started a little bit that way, because there was a big one in Salt Lake City that was full of stanced, and everybody went. It was huge.
Yeah, for sure.
I think it rivaled some of the California meets, as
a matter of fact. It was really large, but it definitely leaned for just that part of the car culture. This one is a lot broader than that. Of course, being Park City, there's a lot of very high-end cars.
Well, it's pulled cars out of Salt Lake, and it's pulled people out of Salt Lake that have these various cars that think, you know what, let's take a drive up, you know, up to Park City.
And I love the variety. I mean, there's everything from literally cars that surprise you from the 60s and 70s all the way up to, that's got dealer tags on it, they bought that this morning kind of feel.
They did.
You know?
The Audi RS5 that was brand new.
It's amazing to see the range. And it's fun for me with the Lotus to have the Lotus to pull in. Because, of course, I'm the solar yellow Lotus, and you noticed me. I was talking to our friend Donnie, who was talking about the fact. He's like, I see your car everywhere. It's like, well, I am hard to miss. So there is that.
Yeah, exactly.
But I did something I haven't done before this morning with the Lotus.
All right.
I find that car really difficult to make exact reversing maneuvers.
Oh, yeah, you mentioned
this. Like, precise turning in reverse is difficult. And I finally accepted the fact.
Well, it's tiny and no visibility.
Exactly. I finally accepted the fact that I just can't see well enough. Now, the car's tiny, but invariably end up putting it in the wrong part of the lane. Like, when you put that car in the middle of a lane, you've got, like, 3 feet on either side. And I'll end up parking it, like, right off the door handles of somebody else if I'm not careful. I'm like, how did I end up here? So I did that thing. I finally solved it this morning. I just decided, no pride, except the weird car. Here's what I'm doing. I did the Lamborghini Countach thing. I didn't sit on the sill, but I cracked the door and shoved my entire upper body out of the car behind me. And I parked perfect.
It worked.
Apparently, that's the visibility I need, is to stare down the back quarter panel of the Elise and back it
up. Anyway. Rear visibility was not on the list when they were designing that car. It didn't even make the, you know what, we should, in packaging, think about, I mean, for example, on the NSX it was.
Yeah.
It's actually pretty good in that car.
Well,
didn't even make the list.
Rear visibility down, like, but where the rear wheels are, irrelevant. The person behind you, you can see, because you've either just passed them or they're gunning for you. But the whole, where's the curb? I've got no idea. None. Zero. So I opened the door.
I'm glad that worked.
Solved it.
Hey. If you don't know where you're at, get out and check. And that applies to any car you're driving. If you don't know, even if you're pulling in, nosing into something and you don't quite know, there is no shame in getting out and looking. Yeah. There's no shame.
There's much more shame in hitting something or digging it or getting out and going, oh, great.
My sister told me this, and I mean, I'm taking car advice from my sister, but she drove motor coaches as a summer job for Princess Tours in Alaska. And they explicitly instructed their drivers, if you don't know where you're at, because they would drive these on the train cars to get to Whittier, Alaska, and where they knew the width of the bus was, they looked the lug nuts sticking out. That's how they know. That's why those lug nuts are so long on trucks and buses, because they're looking at their lug nuts to see where their wheels are at.
Interesting. Okay.
And she said, they instructed us, if you don't know where you're at, just get out and look.
Interesting.
Yeah. If you hit something, way more shame.
Yeah, far,
you're an idiot.
Far worse.
Why didn't you get out and look?
Yeah, that's funny.
So I the same way. No shame whatsoever.
So who great cares? Group this morning. That was a lot of fun. We hope you're having some sort of car fun this past weekend. Happy Tuesday to you.
Yeah.
We're recording this a little bit early because we got a lot of scheduling stuff going on. I am almost done with stuff for season three. I've got about a week or 10 days more of editorial and post-production on season three.
Okay.
And then mid-August, we're already shooting season four. We're locking that down.
Can't
believe
it.
Happening. We are, I promise you, okay, back time what I just said about my schedule. We are slowly gathering all the info for the first weekend in October Utah meetup.
Yeah.
It will go live on the website in about a week or so. It is going to be going live right about the time that I wrap up post, because it's on my extreme list of things to do. But TV is first. So that is definitely happening first weekend of October. We're shooting second weekend of October. There's so much going on this fall, and I'm really excited about the chance to meet with you guys and just do stuff. Thanks to all of you that are listening here locally that have said hello to us recently. I feel like there's been a lot of those conversations.
Yeah, pretty
late.
Cool.
Thank you. If you happen to roll through Park City for fun and you want to say hello, we're open to that as well. Yes, I'm putting that out there. That's what I know.
Well, guys, I hope you enjoyed the episode 2 that we just crossed this last weekend. Mm-hmm. And coming up on Saturday, July 21, is episode 3. And I'm teasing it now. It's the Honda Civic Type R versus the Focus RS.
That's a fun one.
It's red and blue cars.
Yeah.
So the Civic Type R is red.
Yeah.
Focus RS is blue. It is awesome. I cannot wait to share this with everybody.
It's a very fun one. It's one of my favorite ones of the season. And all 6 of these are very divergent. I keep saying that because I keep being kind of amazed by it as well.
No kidding.
But I've got 2 or 3 real favorites of this season, and this one is one of them. So I'm very excited.
It's going to be awesome. So that's 7:30 Eastern Time, Velocity Channel, Saturday, July 21. So that will replay if you don't, you know, don't catch it this time around. Mm-hmm. So everything will repeat. Don't worry. But can't wait to share that with you. And thanks to our presenting sponsor, Covercraft,
as well
as Griot's Garage, Auto Tempest, and Brush Hero 2. That code every day will work for Griot's Garage and Covercraft.
Mm-hmm.
Covercraft, you can get free shipping in the U.S. Mm-hmm. Griot's will give you 10% off your order. So
and
use those codes.
Keep in mind, with Covercraft, they're shipping large-ish items to you. So that free shipping matters. You're going to appreciate that free shipping. And honestly, it's been hot enough of late. I've been using sunscreens and everything. My wife has even kind of come around because it's gotten hot again. Because,
mm-hmm.
I mean, the sunscreen for her Cayenne works great. But she doesn't use it a lot.
Oh, yeah,
she's
right.
She's like, yeah, the sunscreen, whatever. But now it's getting hot again. My wife's like, where's the sunscreen? Let's put that up. Let's put that
it
sunscreen up.
It actually helps.
Yeah,
it's
it
great.
Absolutely does. It's here's the thing. I got to talk to our friends at Covercraft.
Yeah.
There is
yeah.
one way I need to talk to them because they do not make one for the Lotus.
Think they can make you a custom one?
I don't know. I'm going to ask them what's involved because I would love to have one for the Lotus. There's one company that sells a decent one for the Lotus, and I have it, but it's a roll-up foily kind, and I kind of hate that.
Oh, yeah. Just spring-loaded action sticks into the corners kind of thing?
No, but it rolls into that terrible roll, and it's crinkly and all that kind of stuff, which works. Trust me, without one, the car's a sauna. Okay, but with one, so it helps to have anything. I could probably put up a bed sheet and be improved. But the Covercraft ones, because they fold flat, are so much easier to work with, and they're not that crinkly, foily junk.
Great.
Anyway, I'll have to talk to them, see if I'm sure they would sell 2. One to me and one to somebody else.
Hey, they might. Yeah. There's a business case.
Maybe,
talk it up.
Maybe and, there is. We'll see.
You know, anyway, other lease owners
this
might
is what
for
the unique
too.
Car reality is, yeah.
Well, we've got a topic Tuesday that is pretty cool, and another car debate after the break for George and Sarah H. They're in Guatemala City, mm-hmm. Guatemala. They wrote in to ask about turning over the entire garage.
Let's start again.
They're open to this.
Yeah, it's really cool.
This is amazing.
It's really cool.
So they're working down there, and can't wait to debate that. But first, we got to get to this topic Tuesday here because
this is a hard one.
B. Burles on Instagram wrote to us recently and said, you know, how about the best cars for each decade? Not every decade since cars were in existence, but how about cars that best represented that decade? And what I liked about this question is it can change. A month from now, we can think, you know what?
That's true of all of these.
You know,
all of these topics.
So it's very subjective.
Yeah.
But
sure.
I like this, and I like breaking it down. I actually started way back in the 50s, and I brought it all the way to the 10s is what I'm calling this decade.
I couldn't go back further than the 50s, but I did go back 50s as well.
You did? Okay.
Yeah. And I'm curious of your approach. My approach, I guess, is kind of similar. There's some crossover here, kind of similar to what we just did with iconic cars, like the top 5 moment in time cars. There's some similarities here because I was thinking about cars that, look, there's plenty of cars on my list right now that are not cars I've driven. Plenty of them.
Oh, sure.
But I was trying to think about cars where when I see that car, I think about the culture that lived around it, like time period-wise it lived around it. That was a car that is representative of that time, much more so than is it the best to drive? Was it the most whatever? It's just indicative of that time period, and I see it, and I am aware of where it goes culturally and timeline-wise. That's how I picked these.
That was kind of my headspace, too, and I do have some particular cars to call out here, but I looked at it as a this decade belonged to blank manufacturer.
Okay, interesting.
That's
all
how
right.
I looked at
sure,
it because
sure, sure.
I think of, you know, 90s and this is the manufacturer. Maybe 2 or 3 that,
okay,
you know what, the 90s belonged to those manufacturers.
Okay,
that was
I like
cool.
That too.
Even though
like that too. Yeah.
We could slice and dice this up because there's car manufacturers that had great cars in every decade.
Sure, of
even
course.
The 70s.
Of course, yeah.
So
yeah.
We could say, okay, well, that car was great. I mean,
well, I have a
we
couple
could go
of cars.
Far.
I have a couple of cars that you'll see. I put them in decades where they remind me of that decade, but they didn't start in that decade.
Good.
You know, they started at the tail end of one decade, but by the time they became a thing, it was a next decade. And they define that decade for me. I'll tease one right now. For example, the Volkswagen van.
Oh.
Okay. Or, you know, the Beetle. I'll go with the Beetle. The Beetle's been around forever.
Well, yeah.
But that's a late 60s, early 70s car. I think of that car as a 70s car.
Right.
It's not a 70s car.
It's like, I mean, 59.
It's pretty much in this entire category. Every decade, it's out there.
Yeah, that's true.
But I think of it a car
from
the 70s.
And it's all about the Volkswagen Beetle. Moving on to the debate.
Yeah, exactly.
We finished that topic.
Exactly. Best car of every decade. Volkswagen Beetle. Moving on. All of our listeners are not here next time.
Awful.
That's how that happens.
Yeah.
But anyway, but things like that happen where it's a car that I know didn't come out there, but that's the place mm-hmm. that it goes in my head.
I have a car like that, too.
Okay. Well, let's
that's
start.
Funny.
1950s. Where are you?
I think the 50s belong to Cadillac.
I can see it.
I keep saying that, you know, Cadillac was the height of optimism in the post-war. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know what? Everybody's got a car, you know, just huge. Let's go crazy with the styling. The tail fin era, of course. One of my favorite Cadillacs is actually the 53 because it looks so heavy and chunky and it's this huge, enormous, how does that thing even move kind of car slathered in chrome. But of course, the 59 Cadillac, the Series 62 is one of my favorites. That's just an enormous car. But also Mercedes, and the particular car for the 50s is the 1955 Mercedes 300 SL, the Gullwing Mercedes.
That
sticks out in my mind.
That's
as,
a huge one there.
Okay, that's the 50s. That screams 50s mm-hmm. for the Europeans for me.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
But otherwise, I think Cadillac owned the 50s.
I see it. I see all the cars you're mentioning there. I will admit that my list is very U.S. market biased.
Fair enough. Okay? I try to divide it up a little bit.
But I see your 53. I like the big old Eldorados with the massive fins and the double front headlights and just crazy. So those Cadillacs are so 50s. But then I have to say the mid 70s Chevy Bel Air.
Okay. All right.
Okay. That 57 Chevy look. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I feel
like
that whole car. What's funny to me about the 50s, if you're not talking crazy Cadillacs, you look at the Chevy Bel Air, and I feel like almost every American manufacturer was making that shape.
Yeah, pretty much.
But the Bel Air kind of defines it for me. All right. So that's a big car for me. So I think that Chevy Bel Air for me is very much 50s. And then I love those big finned caddies. Those are the two that were on my list.
So cool. I mean, again, you could argue
tons of things,
all kinds of things. But, you know, Studebaker Champions don't stick out in my mind is, you know what? That was an era defining car. No, they were just trying to make a go of it and sell some cars.
But so many of those sedans are approximately the same shape in the 50s.
Yeah.
It's very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I just thought, all right, 50s just screams Cadillac. And, I mean, 60s, moving on a little bit. There was some crossover in the tail fin era.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But, of course, things died down. I think the 60s belong to Jaguar and Corvettes.
Okay.
I think the 60s is when the Corvettes really caught on as more than the Boulevard
Cruiser. Yeah, they're gorgeous.
And everybody went, oh, man, Corvettes. Yeah. But then Jaguar for the Europeans, for the Brits, coming on strong with the E-Type. I mean,
the C2 Vet and that Jaguar E-Type. E-Type's, of course, on my list. Nobody's surprised by that.
Yeah.
As I started digging into the 60s, I thought of a few. Again, the Volkswagen Beetle starts to get a rise in the late 60s, as does the Volkswagen Van. But those go into the 70s.
It's the Beetle for every decade.
But I also thought the 60s, the Lincoln Continental suicide door.
That's a great one. That's
plus,
a great one.
Especially in convertible. That's a car from the 1960s, and you just know it. It's just a car from the 1960s. There it is.
Lincoln peaked in the 60s, and it's been a downhill slide ever since.
Tonight's t-shirt is Lincoln peaked in the 60s.
That's, they did. I mean, the JFK car, the suicide doors, on and on.
And of course, the E-Type. But I also think the Alfa Romeo Spider goes here.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, that early version of the Spider, that's in a very 1960s car. And of course, the movie The Graduate is an influence here as well.
Sure, sure.
But that's a car that is like the alt car in the 60s. You saw a lot of them, but there they are. You know, that Alfa Romeo Spider is there for me for sure.
Wow. I struggled with the 70s a little bit. Not to say that there weren't good cars.
Many people struggled with the 70s. I would like that noted. The 70s was a difficult, odd decade, yes.
And I thought, okay, there's standout cars. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I'm not saying Porsches quite yet, even though Porsche did have some great 70s 911s.
Yeah, okay,
great
sure.
70s cars. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But coming back to it, I mean, we're talking the oil crisis and on mm-hmm. and all kinds of things that affected cars so negatively.
For sure.
Ford Cobra 2. Mustang.
Yeah, the Mustang, too. Yeah, that's fantastic, isn't it?
So I came to Jeep and Chrysler. Now,
okay.
They were separate at that point in time.
They were separate companies, yeah. For sure they were.
As was AMC. Mm-hmm. I mean, AMC was still, you know, kind of doing their thing. But I still think Jeep and Chrysler, I mean, you know, the Cordobas and the LeBarons and the, all that kind of stuff, that people were kind of a little bit more frugal with their money, I think, and
yeah.
still wanting some good luxury, but, you know, kind of going after Chrysler, and that's when they had their... I think they just came on strong, interestingly, in the 70s. But Jeep as well, because Jeep is one of those mainstays, like the Volkswagen Beetle.
Yeah, yeah.
Any era you point to, hey, Jeep, they're cool. I don't care what year it is. It's cool. It's a Jeep. Why not?
Yeah.
So I look at Jeep for the 70s. And, you know, you look at the seven-slot grill. It's mm-hmm. it's inherent in the design for forever.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm looking at those.
I like see the 70s. Okay, I see the 70s as this. It's interesting because of the oil crisis and all of that situation. The mid-70s is a black hole for cars. The early 70s is we're still getting bigger and bigger and bigger engines and that kind of stuff. That is the carryover of the freewheeling 60s. It's still happening in like 71, 72, right? But then mid-70s, you do have Mustang 2 and other cars that are just trying to be the exact opposite of that world. And the cars go into this weird malaise area, black hole. But then in the late 70s, even though the car manufacturers are kind of climbing out a little bit of that, what do we do about all these new regulations? The cars aren't fast, but they start to become very ostentatious because now we've got the disco era.
True.
Okay,
true.
So this is where my head's at. So in the 70s, I've got the Barracuda.
That's
that
up
is
there.
The 1970s to me. The whole, the haunches, the scale of that car,
that's
that
awesome.
Car's, its car's kind of ridiculous in a fantastic, ostentatious 70s way.
Yeah.
Really like that one. In a similar way, what happens to the design of the Corvette over the course of the 70s?
It's dramatic, as a matter of fact.
Those fenders just get really big up front and the haunches in the
yeah.
back, and it's just this long, wide, fendered thing in the 70s. Big, big 70s look there.
Yeah,
love that.
True, true.
And similarly, the I was talking about ostentatious, the Pontiac Trans Am. Think of the
totally.
Smokey and the Bandit car,
totally.
Okay, with the fire chicken on the hood. This is not a fast car.
Late 70s. I think it
late 70s, like 78.
Horsepower?
It's around the 200 mark in a car that weighs more than it should. I mean, but this is all
oh
they could
gosh.
Do, right? But that car, I mean, come on, it's got the fire chicken on the hood, right?
Totally
I mean, this is
awesome.
This is absurd, and yet it is so 1970s.
They're still cool cars.
They're still cool cars. They're not good cars, but they're
no,
cool
they're
cars.
Cool.
There's
exactly.
a very big difference. And in this same vein of the 70s, the Ferrari Daytona.
Oh, see, yeah, they're standout cars.
Long, ostentatious.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, it's one of those forever hood cars. It's like, why? How is
true.
this long? It's
true.
Just this long. And I don't know why, but every time I think of Ferrari Daytona, which they made in a really nice blue and a good-looking red, the first image that comes into my brain, like my personal brain snapshot, is a brown one. Because it's the 70s.
Well, it is the 70s.
It's a brown Ferrari
Everybody
Daytona.
Everybody was doing it.
You know, with the big sidewall rubber and all of that. So that's the 70s for
Avocado me. Green. Oh, man. I sat in a 73 Ferrari Daytona, the convertible. And
okay.
this was a car. Oh, man. This had to be 8 years ago now at the Monterey auctions.
Yeah.
And it was reserved at $800,000 or $900,000 then. I'm just going, barely driven. Had, I don't know, 20,000 miles on it, something like that. V12.
No.
Gigantic hood.
And they're spectacular. I mean, I love them. As, of course I do. I love them in every color I can think of. And I just pulled up a bunch of pictures, and the pictures are awesome in every color.
So
I love
amazing.
It in blue. But I don't know why. The first way it comes into my mind is as a brown Ferrari Daytona. Because it's the 1970s. Yeah.
Of course. All right. So 80s excess. Come on.
Mm-hmm.
Yuppies was all I could think about when I
okay.
came to the 80s. I could
sure,
all
sure,
I thought
sure.
about
yeah.
was Houston and yuppies.
Okay.
And
all
BMWs right. and having, you know, the 1989 BMW 325i
sure,
that every
sure, sure.
cute girl drove in high school and
well, and then it was
know,
just, you know, it was the M3 for the executives. Everybody was driving 3
it
series.
It was like
3
the
series
Jetta,
was everywhere.
You
yeah.
know, of
practically,
its,
practically
of
was
its day,
crazy.
Every cute girl had one. But of course, the 1987 Lamborghini Countach is on my list.
Mm-hmm.
I had the poster. It was white.
Mm-hmm.
Wanted one. But yeah, anything from the BMW lineup, this was the 80s was BMW's
interesting.
Hot streak decade,
okay.
I think.
I see that for sure.
And this for me is where Porsches land because
okay.
of excess, because of the 3.2 Carreras,
mm-hmm.
because how good these cars were getting. That's where I'm slotting. Don't have a lot of love for 80s U.S. cars, to be honest.
Okay.
I mean, there's the, you know, 87 Buick Grand National, say the
yes.
GNX.
Yes.
That's a standout car.
Belongs on the list for sure.
But
yeah.
otherwise, I'll give you an example that's going to melt your ears. Okay. The Cadillac Cimarron.
Yeah.
You hate me now, don't you?
There's that, yeah.
That existed.
Did exist, and we've now just wasted perfectly good digital information on that again.
Remember the Cadillac Catera? See, that's why the 50s belong to Cadillac.
Because
not
it hasn't been since then.
The 80s and 90s.
Yeah. Cadillac peaked in the 50s. Lincoln peaked in the 60s. Terrible to say. Terrible to say. Interesting. The 80s for me is one of the most varied decades for cars because there was a surprising amount of hero car television going on.
Yeah. Are we talking Knight Rider kind of stuff?
Hang on. That influences lots of things, all right? Cars actually coming out of the 80s. I want to talk about those first.
Okay.
And then I want to talk about cars that are famous, and I think of them as the 80s, but they may or may not be 80s cars. So first off, cars from the 80s. The Testarossa.
Yeah.
That is an 80s car. Now, I saw a fantastic – I'm going a little tangent. Saw a fantastic Testarossa this morning. We're going to try to get it as a fast blast.
Yeah, right.
It is blacked out. But he has removed the side strakes. And
it's
we were having a conversation, and I agree with him. We're having a conversation about the fact that the side strakes are what make that car look like a car from the 80s. Without it, I think it's as timeless as the 355. With it, you go, that's a car from the 80s. You think Varnay sunglasses. You think Patrick Nagel drawings. It's a car from the 80s. You think Miami Vice. When you take the side strakes
OP
out, you give it a big side scoop.
Yeah.
And it starts to become as timeless as the 355.
I think the 355 still beats it.
I agree with you.
There's a little bit of some sharp angle styling to it that still screams 80s.
So those side strakes, those louvers are gone on this car, which is really cool. I was talking to him about his car. He just got it back from being at the dealer for 3 months.
What?
He took it in for a tie rod issue, and they kept finding little things to solve.
Oh, my gosh.
In the process, you will love this. And he was laughing about
this. How much did he spend?
I don't even know. Ugh. But here's the part of it he did say. In the process, of course, they gave him an alignment.
Okay.
And he saw the bill, and the alignment was $200. And he thought, that's a little much for an alignment, but it's Ferrari, $200.
$200?
For an alignment, yeah.
That seems cheap to me.
Well, hang on. Because you're thinking Ferrari alignment. But here's the funny part. In the stack of paperwork he got back, his thinking is, mistakenly included the subcontractor, because they didn't do the alignment at the Ferrari dealer. They sent it to their alignment specialist. That has an alignment shop.
Okay.
In the stack of paperwork was what he charged Ferrari.
They hadn't marked it up yet?
So he has his thing of what he charged Ferrari, and then he has the bill from Ferrari, which is a $200 alignment. The actual alignment cost the Ferrari dealer $58.
What?
And Ferrari charged him, his words, the Ferrari tax for a $200 alignment.
Mm.
Anyway, so that happened. So the Testarossa goes here. The 959 Porsche goes here.
It does.
80s.
Oh, absolutely.
The Ferrari F40 has to go here.
Yeah.
Also 80s.
Good.
The Honda Civic goes here.
Okay.
Because
Explain.
I feel like the Civic is the place that Honda starts to make an impact in the 80s. You start to see, at least for me, I remember starting to see Civics kind of everywhere.
Sure.
And they were that car that was... It wasn't the weird oddball thing you bought, because they were here in the late 70s. It wasn't the weird oddball thing what is that? It's not a weird spaceship. It's now just becoming a car that is common and has got American manufacturers on notice, and it just keeps running.
It did, especially with the CVCC from 1979 and the oil crisis, and Honda went, hi, everyone.
Yes.
Want to save some fuel?
Yes. While America's struggling to make small cars, Honda is just killing it. And
yeah,
all of a sudden
true.
In the 80s, I feel like, is when those cars start to really take hold and people start seeking them out. Civics just start to become a thing in the 80s.
Sure.
That's why I put them here. I also, you mentioned it as well, the Countach goes here.
Countach. Oh,
but
man.
Now let's talk TV cars that make an impact.
Okay. All right.
The 80s is the decade of the 1969 Dodge Charger General Lee.
Okay.
It's a 1969 car, but the Dukes of Hazzard were one of the top rated shows on television. By the way, if you watch the Dukes of Hazzard now, ponder the weird, innocent time we were in. That the two most, I'm not kidding, the two most popular shows on TV when they were both on were Dukes of Hazzard and the A-Team.
Yeah, true.
Those were top rated shows. Rewatch those now and ponder the entertainment landscape, that entertainment television like that is the most watched TV out there.
After you're finished cringing while
Seriously.
Watching them. Yes.
But that also means that the weird GMC kidnapper van is cool, yeah. but is the 80s because of the A-Team.
The vanning thing. Oh, my gosh.
But that was cool because of the
A-Team. It was, yeah.
Those vans have never been cool, but you make it black with a weird red stripe and a tiny little tail and a big, huge Mr. T at the wheel, and suddenly it's cool.
That's interesting what the television landscape influenced in the car mm-hmm. world, and you know their choice of cars and how they modded them mm-hmm. and whatever influenced what we liked then.
Completely, completely. Very so that's on there. Two more TV, and I'm done with the 80s.
Okay.
The 80s was interesting as I started to unpack it. Of course,
it's huge and deep, and
of course, Knight Rider than the kit car.
Yeah, see that has to go here too.
Is that a good car? Again, my first car was a 1982 Pontiac. Yeah, Pontiac Firebird with a four-cylinder.
Was that a manual?
It was a terrible, terrible car. Yes, I learned to drive.
At least it was a
manual. I learned to drive manual well because 90 horsepower has got to really be worked. That four-speed manual is going to take some doing because you got to find power. Okay, so
yeah.
That's why I learned to drive manual. But the Knight Rider, the 82 Trans Am.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah, for sure.
That's an 80s car. But then also, I have to say it. It puts this company that we all know, but it puts it on the map for the average person. Magnum PI and the Ferrari 308.
Oh, heck yeah.
Nobody's arguing that heck the Ferrari yeah. 308 is the greatest Ferrari ever. It's not, but it is most well-known Ferrari ever, I would argue, because people that don't know cars know that's a Ferrari, and mm-hmm. they know it because of Magnum PI, and then they start to equate, and I'm talking about kind of non-car people now, they start to equate anything that looks vaguely like that must be a Ferrari.
Especially red.
Absolutely.
If your Porsche is in red, even though they've got the Guards red thing
sure, of
their own, yep. if your Lotus is, mm-hmm. is that a Ferrari?
Mm-hmm.
It's low. It's lower than your waist.
Yep.
Standing there next
to
it.
If my Elise was red, I bet it would happen a lot.
I think it would.
Yeah.
I think it would. That's interesting. I'm also interested that you said the Honda Civic goes there, and I do agree with you that it influenced that decade, but I think the 90s belonged to the Japanese.
I see that.
Across the board,
that's kind of my
down.
List as well. Yeah.
And especially Honda, because think about the 91 Acura NSX.
Mm-hmm.
You brought up the Ferrari.
It's on my list.
And then 2 or 3 years later, Acura drops this, or Honda drops the NSX on the world, and everybody goes, like you brought up before,
mm-hmm.
wait. Supercars can be reliable mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. should be, and they come with a really great warranty, and they just run?
They just run.
What?
I'm just going to do errands in it. Yeah.
CRX, even though, yes, the CRX, is the first gen was in the 80s, the CRX that I love was the 91 CRX.
Okay. Yeah.
Love the reshape, restyle of that car. Mm-hmm. The Honda Prelude. Remember, you know,
yeah,
91
absolutely.
Honda Prelude, the four-wheel steering on
that
car?
I know, yeah.
On a
Honda was
a
killing it in the
car.
90s. I agree. Yeah.
That was like Honda building the FRS then.
To some degree.
That two-door sports car, even though it was front-wheel drive,
yeah.
but you
yeah.
know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Even the S2000.
Completely.
Now think about it. You could argue with me that, okay, so, you know, conceived and dropped in 99 and then 2000 for the AP1 generation.
Yeah.
That car was entirely conceived and built and dreamt up in the 90s.
Yep, agreed.
So
agreed.
From
it's
probably
95, yep.
96, and they're conceiving this car to drop it mm-hmm. late 90s, early 2000s, because we think of the Honda S2000. This is a 2000s car,
yeah.
the aughts.
Yeah, yeah.
But I say, mm-hmm. I mean, let's talk about the Mazda Miata. 1990 is when they dropped that car.
Yeah.
I think the 90s belong to the Japanese.
I agree with that.
The Mitsubishi 3000 GT VR4.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh.
You're in the same place I was. I was thinking about the 90s as the tech decade,
and
the Japanese car decade for sure.
So cool.
I had the NSX on my list. I see your Miata. I love it. I see the VR4. I like that. I have to say Supra.
Supra's on the list.
I have to say Nissan 300ZX.
Yeah.
You could also argue the Mazda RX-7, but the rotary Mazdas, I feel like, have always been fringe more than they've been iconic, but that is still a great car.
Sure, and I think the Miata kind of overshadowed that car as a, hey,
yeah,
look at what we're doing.
The general people know, yeah, true.
But Mazda was still doing great stuff.
Yeah. Supra and the 300ZX are both on that list because they're just great, great cars. And what was everybody else doing in the 90s while they're throwing those down?
Yeah, no kidding.
I mean, look at it this way. Take a 90s Camaro or a 90s Mustang. And look at where it is and how it drives compared to a stock version of those Supers and 300ZXs and those kind of things.
No kidding.
It's a very different world. Those worlds have blended now a lot more than they used to.
Yeah.
But they were
yeah.
very different worlds. So I find that fascinating. And then I have to mention another one you're going to see the thinking resurrect in the next couple decades.
Okay. All right.
Where it's a car manufacturer you don't expect, and they come out with parts from elsewhere. okay, engines specifically from elsewhere, but they just did their own thing, and everybody kind of went, what's this now?
Okay.
90s, McLaren F1.
Oh, of course. Absolutely. Oh, man.
And that thinking is going to show up again. But that, but in the 90s,
brilliant.
It's just an island of a car. It just drops.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's like, what is this now? How does, do you see what they did there with the thing? And the, across the, they're still being talked about, but that was the 90s.
I mean, again, specific cars can be called out, but do we want to talk about the Ford Taurus from 1990s? Does anybody want to talk about 90s American cars?
The Yamaha V8, maybe, but other than that,
maybe,
not really.
But come on. You know what I mean. So, yeah, I love that. Had some trouble with the aughts, the 2000s.
Okay.
And I think where I'm landing is the horsepower wars.
Ah, okay, in general. Yeah,
in
sure,
general,
sure, sure.
From the Germans, as a matter of fact.
Sure, yeah.
And I think the king of the aughts is Mercedes and AMG.
Okay.
I think they win for throwing down and just... Hey, high horsepower, massive cars. I think Mercedes started to kind of resurrect themselves as far as build quality. Now they're, you know, fantastic again. But I think there was, I don't know, 90s were okay.
Okay.
But
okay.
Then the 2000s, they really threw down and then just started stuffing incredible horsepower. And we'd always read about the AMG anything from the 2000s was like, what? How did they do that?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Unbelievable. I mean, they're still going strong now, of course. And I think they've used that as a launching place for things like the AMG GTS and GTR.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
Stuff like that. I think that kind of set them up for the success that they have now. Because remember, that AMG was a brand acquired from the 80s,
mm-hmm.
and then they had to do something with it. I think it kind of manifested itself in the 2000s.
Interesting. Okay. In the 2000s, I'm going to continue with that kind of McLaren F1 thinking, which is cars that manufacturers, either unknown manufacturers or surprising manufacturers, did a car people kind of went, what is this now?
Mm.
Okay. The Nissan GTR. I know that's late 2000s, but Nissan GTR.
Yeah.
That's a 2000s car.
It is.
It's just a techie 2000s car, and it was just this weird thing for them to drop.
Yeah, true.
Similarly, Bugatti Veyron.
Okay. All right.
The Lotus Elise, I know it has existed since the 90s. I know it has in Britain. But as far as it becomes a car in the U.S. in 05.
I think it becomes a car that is in car enthusiast conscience or consciousness.
In the U.S. it is.
In the U.S.
You know, the S1, the early ones in the U.K., I know about those. But it became a car that more people knew about. In the U.S. we knew about it. And it was unlike anything else.
Yeah.
And the closest thing to it, I think, is also a car from the 2000s. And that is the Cayman from Porsche.
That's up there.
Who has never really had anything that felt like it encroached on the 911's territory. Even the Boxster, because it's convertible only, didn't really encroach.
They wouldn't allow it. They wouldn't allow
themselves.
And
then the Cayman drops. And yes, it's the Boxster with a hard top, but the Cayman drops, and it becomes this simultaneously almost attainable Porsche, but also this car that is the, instead of a 911, which has never existed in 911 lexicon,
mm-hmm.
where you would actually have an, instead of a 911, I might get a whatever.
Right, right.
So the Cayman goes here. And then also another one, very much you'll see in the McLaren F1 thinking, is the Pagani Zonda.
Interesting.
Because here comes a brand new exotic hypercar company. I mean, McLaren was known for doing F1, but they didn't do road cars. So that was weird.
No.
Zonda is, okay, here's a guy that worked at Lamborghini, and he's now making hand-built cars. And by the way, have you noticed the Mercedes V12? And oh my gosh, this thing is fast. Wasn't here in the U.S., but I feel like it was so crazy that it started to influence just enthusiasts in general knew of this car.
Hmm.
The Pagani Zonda is an early 2000s just icon to me.
Hmm. Fascinating. All right. Well, yeah, I saw that Cayman come out in 06, and mm-hmm. I knew I had to have it.
All right. Understandable.
You know when there's cars that drop and you think, I will own that car in my life sooner rather than later. I will have one.
I was on a 10-year quest for an Elise. 10-year quest for an Elise. Yes.
Oh, my gosh. That was the Cayman for me. It dropped, and I went,
yep,
I'm done. The 10s, the decade that we're currently in,
mm-hmm.
I'm not going to call out any specific car here, but I think generally speaking, the 10s belongs to the Koreans. I think they have redefined themselves and become so ubiquitous and so, wow, they're just such a great choice.
Mm-hmm.
And now in some cases, exceeding the capabilities of other car manufacturers for such a lower cost and such a great alternative. I think this decade belongs to the Koreans.
Interesting.
Generally speaking.
Okay.
Now, again, there's other cars.
Plenty of great cars that have come out. Yeah, I see that.
But I think they've just had this resurgence, and they've learned and then defined their own brand, defined their flavor, and now it's all about them. Honestly.
Okay. I actually, that makes me think about this. I actually think that this last decade, okay, from right here to the late 2000s, so like 08 to here we are in 2018, I actually think that's been a fascinating decade for Porsche.
Well,
because
sure.
of how much they've broadened their model lineup.
Okay.
I mean, think about the fact that 10 years ago, we pretty much had, I was just talking about the fact that the Cayman came out in 06. Okay. But prior to that, prior to the Cayman, I mean, the Boxster got all the original guys riled because why is there a Boxster?
Right.
Because it was the 911 and we shouldn't do anything else, kind of. It's kind of where we were.
The Panamera got people riled, too.
But that's the thing, though. We've got Boxster, then Panamera, then Cayenne, or Cayenne, then Panamera. Now we've got Macan. They have exploded their lineup, and they've exploded their lineup successfully in a way that has never happened for Porsche before. And in the last, I'm not even putting it in the 2000s or now, I'm just saying in the last decade in general, the lineup of Porsche has changed dramatically and almost across the board successfully. That is difficult.
It is. I think the future actually belongs to Porsche too.
It'll be very interesting to see where it goes.
The Mission E, the Taycan, I do.
I mean, kind of starting with that Carrera GT with the crazy V10, Porsche starts going, we're here to be more than a niche brand. But that leads me to a brand that I think so far has owned the 2010s, and that is McLaren. Because I think about the fact that, look, I love Paganis, all right? Obviously, I'm a Lotus freak. But the cars I'm mentioning right now, these other exotic, Koenigsegg is fascinating to me. I think the Koenigseggs are fascinating. But all of these I'm listening right now are alts. They are, I sought out something irregular.
Right. I'm painting with a pretty broad brush over here, too.
Yeah, but I'm saying those cars, if you seek out a Koenigsegg or a Pagani, besides the fact that you've got lots of money, besides that, or just, but you seek out a Lotus, you are a weird guy like me. You're seeking something that is atypical. What I think is fascinating about McLaren road cars, besides the fact that they're good, is that a decade ago, nothing. They didn't exist. Okay? As far as like a lineup of cars.
Well.
But as far as like a lineup, here we have, but now,
I mean,
right
2012
now,
is the MP4.
I know. But I'm saying, so, okay, 2008, you weren't buying a McLaren. But now, in 2018, if you have the money to buy a Porsche or a Ferrari or a Lamborghini, you are also thinking McLaren.
Yeah.
It is on your list of things to consider if you're shopping for those cars. If you have 150, 200 grand in your pocket to buy a sports car, McLaren is on your consideration list. A brand that 10 years ago wasn't making a lineup of road cars. I have to give it to McLaren in the tens.
No, I like that. Think about this. McLaren is not just being cross-shopped. It's now a fanboy aspirational brand.
It is
like
for me.
Like Ferrari
completely.
Or Lamborghini, you know, the big boys, the brands. It's not a, hey, this is an outlier and you might choose this just as an alternative and you can't
afford
Lotus the big
is.
Boys.
Yeah.
It's now a one of the big three or four or five, however many the big supercar manufacturers are.
That's the point I'm making.
They're
exactly right.
A large aspirational, like, I'm not a Ferrari fanboy, but I'm a McLaren person.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And that amazes me because everybody else with a, if you will, supercar startup has not been able to break into that big three, Porsche, Ferrari, Lamborghini, and McLaren's gone, oh, us too.
Sure.
I mean,
they're still niche in terms
of
cars and manufacturing and affordability too.
Yes,
so.
but if you're in that world, it's on your list. And then the other one I have to say is in the tens is the Model S.
Yeah.
That shifts the car landscape.
It sure does. It's 5% of sales, though. So it shifts thinking.
Less.
But I don't think it influences the car landscape as much as everybody thinks it does.
I think it's fair. But it's a car. It's a 2010s car.
Like, it is.
Talk about cars from the 2010s.
It is, for sure.
And up, yep, completely.
Wow, we have got to go to
four
a break.
4 hours later,
No kidding. See, the debate could rage.
It will.
It will move on.
That's
and
what's fun
it
about
could
these
change,
Topic Tuesdays.
But hey, we'll get to more Topic Tuesdays, and then we'll come back for a quick break. And then we'll get to some social media questions after that. We'll be right back.
You can find a lot of weird and surprising things in cars. I mean, some people have, I don't know, petrified French fries or melted crayons. But one thing that shouldn't surprise you are Continental belts.
I'll bet you didn't know. They're original equipment in tens of millions of FCA, Ford, and GM vehicles that roll off the assembly line. They're also original equipment on the majority of BMWs and Volkswagens.
Now Continental is launching an aftermarket line of the Multi V-Belt. It's their original equipment technology series.
And Continental has an OE technology series Multi V-Belt for 98% of the vehicles on the road in the US and Canada. Hey, you get enough surprises working on cars and trucks already. A belt shouldn't be one of them.
So go with the Continental OE Technology Series Multi V-Belt. It's the belt with original equipment pedigree. You can get the full story by visiting oetechnologyseries.com.
When you think of the things you do every day, maybe it's brushing your wheels to clean them, but brushing your teeth probably isn't top of your mind. For something that's so important to your health, and it should be, that's why Quip wants to help you brush better. Quip was called the best electric toothbrush by GQ and the Tesla of toothbrushes by Bloomberg.
My son has a toothbrush with a timer on it that makes Star Wars Darth Vader noises, and so he knows how long to brush. But you become an adult, and you just, it's this subconscious thing you do. Quip's got a built-in timer. It actually vibrates and indicates when you need to change the sides of your mouth, and it also tells you how long to brush so you get the dentist recommended 2 minutes.
I'm attracted to this just by the design alone. It's slim, it's slender. I really appreciate the design of this toothbrush. 75% of us don't refresh our bristles every 3 months, let alone visit the dentist every 6 months. Quip starts at just $25. And if you go to getquip.com/driver right now, you'll get your first refill pack free with a Quip electric toothbrush.
That's your first refill pack free at getquip.com/driver. Let me spell that so we're clear. This is getquip.com/driver now.
Everybody's got a to-do list. You know, drop off the dry cleaning, pick up some milk. Here's an idea. Let's add save hundreds of dollars on car insurance to that list.
And the good thing is, you don't have to drop off or pick up anything. All you do is go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% on your car insurance, or maybe even more.
Got extra money in your pocket? This just may be the most rewarding thing you do today.
Let's talk about Brush Hero real quick. It is a must-have, I think it is, for your car care arsenal. Brush Hero is water-powered. It's a detailing tool. It doesn't move quickly. It's this very simple little thing. You look at it and you think, how does this work? It's this very simple thing. It just has lots of torque. You can get two great brush heads, a soft one for sensitive surfaces and a harder one for stubborn muck. I used it on a mountain bike and it was brilliant.
While originally designed for fast and easy expert-level car and motorcycle detailing, the Brush Hero can clean virtually anything. You name it. Rain gutters, barbecues, lawnmowers, boats, and more. It's really easy to use. Just hook it up to any standard garden hose, flip the handy on-off switch, and start cleaning. It's a great gift idea, too. They've got an extensive line of gift sets and accessories.
Everyday Driver listeners can enjoy 10% off their order at brushhero.com with the code DRIVER. That's right. Use the code DRIVER for this show to get 10% off. You can also find Brush Hero at select Costco and Walmart stores if you don't want the discount. All orders over $40 ship for free, and again, if you use the code DRIVER, you get 10% off.
We're back with George and Sarah H. in Guatemala City, Guatemala. They are
very
looking
cool
to turn over the entire garage. They have written to us with willingness and openness, saying,
yeah,
we love cars, they're interested. Mm-hmm. This is going to be very interesting, as a matter of fact.
For sure.
Because, well, George is, of course, into the... the hot cars, I'll say the usual suspects, things like the Evora, the M2, mm-hmm. the GT350R Mustang,
mm-hmm.
all the fun, the toppers of all of our lists, that, you know, cars we aspire to.
Yeah.
But his wife is looking for something that she can make her own that is, well, he refers to it as, she likes the boxy styling of mm-hmm. kind of the 80s SUVs, but she wants it to be hers, that she doesn't have to worry about, you know, mm-hmm. letting the kids eat ice cream from the car seat and
bring it,
not having to worry about it. So they've got two very different debates here. Mm-hmm. I think George is actually more concerned for his wife than he is for him, because he's got such a litany of, hey, I've got this, I can choose whatever.
I consider it a following.
But for
what
my
you guys
wife,
think? Yeah.
What is she into? Is it going to be old Toyota Land Cruisers? Is it going to be... what could be just hers that she really likes to bomb around in?
Mm-hmm. Well, they currently have the big Lexus SUV, the LX450, that he kind of bought.
It's a big one.
You know, just pulled the trigger all of a sudden on this car.
Yeah.
He's kind of made it into a bit of a rally monster. It's a little bit lifted. It's got some big wheels, and his wife kind of wishes he hadn't done that. But she does like the boxy styling.
Yeah.
And she does, you know, kind of like the boxier trucks. He really has considered things for her like Jeep Cherokee or a Defender 90, the old Toyota Land Cruisers. She's kind of interested in that world. But yeah. he's a little stumped because that can be a rabbit hole too.
And, yeah. And
the budget, here's the thing. The budget is up to 80K. You can find Defender 110s that'll blow out your budget.
Well, that budget, that budget is for both of them.
I know. Though. That's what I'm saying.
I mean, Defender 110s will blow that
get ourselves down the road here and be like, the whole budget's gone. All we got was one car. So we got to be careful.
Uh-huh. Well, George currently has an E39 M5 in storage back in the States. Oof. And he says that they have a work car wherever they are. So the only daily driver that, you know, will be for his wife, she will not likely have a large commute. And she's looking for something with good visibility, big windows, sunroofs, removable tops, large enough to carry the three of them, so a family car, with, he said, quote, you name the equipment, camping, surfing, diving, sporting gear, whatever it is. And again, back to this simple interior thing. It's almost like I'm hearing, I want to hose it out or just do a quick wipe down or something.
I want to not stress it.
Quick rag.
Yeah, for sure.
And
for sure.
If I feel like it.
Yeah.
And something unique looking. She said, George said she likes the safari type of look a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Said cherry red or sky blue paint jobs, wood paneling. So you're thinking, you know, Defenders and Jeep Wagoneers
and old
Land Cruisers and stuff like that. Because she doesn't care if it's super fast or super comfortable.
No.
She just
no.
wants to bomb around in something.
Totally. Totally.
Which is great.
I love it. Yeah.
I love the list. You had, like I said, the Jeep Cherokee, Defender 90 on here. She grew up with her dad's white 61 Corvette that he still has, but they also had the family's old Toyota 40 series,
mm-hmm.
which is cool. And they honeymooned in Italy. She discovered and loved the old Fiat Panda 4x4. That's what pushed her over the edge.
Yeah, that's an over-the-edge car for sure, yeah.
But he's worried about reliability, so he suggested things like the Mini Countryman All4 as a modern vehicle, but I think she's turning up her nose at that one, George. I'm not
sounds
hearing
like
a,
it. Sounds like
resounding.
It,
yeah. I like that. But she likes the brick-on-wheels kind of styling, mm-hmm. and again, she wants it to be hers.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got, you know, Sarah's car to cover. We've got George's car to cover here. Where did you want to start?
We've got the most of maybe 80 grand. And here's the thing I think is fascinating about this. These are cars they're gonna test drive and buy in the fairly near future. But mm-hmm. these are really cars for when they get back to the States in a couple of years.
Yeah.
So what I like is that George is already shopping. That makes me laugh. And he takes regular trips back to the U.S. where he will try to Turo a lot of these cars or mm-hmm. test drive these cars so they know what they're getting. So they're headed that way, and this is kind of the research mode. So I've got some to-drive stuff.
Okay, oh, good.
That I think excellent. You should drive now, and it can influence your situation. George really wants a sports car.
Yeah, he does, even
and
though he, that M5.
He really prefer to have 2 plus 2.
George, you need to sell me that M5 if you ever think about getting rid of it.
Frightening. It may be for sale soon.
Wow.
Yeah. So he really wants something that he can drive, and if need be, the three of them can go somewhere. It's not going to be its primary use, but the three of them could go somewhere. So that's why the 2 plus 2. But if he takes it to a high-performance driving day at a track, it's a worthwhile car to be there in, which mm-hmm. is not really the M5.
Not really. It can, but those cars are getting precious and rare.
Totally. And if we really want to, we could split this into 3 cars, meaning car for the wife, truck for the wife, and then he has a more normal daily and then a car that is more tracking. But I'm trying to get you into one car you can enjoy all the time.
Okay. And this is for Sarah?
This is for George.
Okay.
And your shortlist I like. I mean, you've said, you know, you could go with any of our usual suspects, the Miata, the RX-8 S2000, the 86s, of course. Mm-hmm. A Cayman is great, GT350 M2. But you've said the Evora 400 kind of haunts you. It haunts me too, George, by the way. So that is a great one. I think you need to drive an Evora. It sounds like one thing that's happened in this story across the board is that you've bought cars from afar.
Right.
And you've done well. Right. You've kind of researched and thought about, but you've bought that M5 you drive that you love. You'd never driven one. You bought it. First time it drove it was yours. It rolled off, got delivered, and now you drove the car. Thank God you like it.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to drive the Evora because I like that you like it. Of course, I'm the Lotus guy. The Evoras are awesome. I would love to own one.
I love the 400.
The 400's amazing.
I love with that car.
And it's on my personal extreme short list.
Yeah.
But the 400's not really low enough to be talked about here yet.
In price wise,
exactly.
You're talking. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah,
so you're looking at
still
the standard
grand.
Evora or Evora S, which you could get for 45, but I've spent just over half your budget now. So drive it. I don't know that it's a match here, though.
For what he's looking for,
I don't
you think?
Know that it. Look, I love them, but I don't know that it is kind of usable and normal enough. He's coming out of an M5, which is very usable. Into an Evora, which is quite a bit the other way.
It's not as usable as you think it is. It's got back seats, but it's still a fun, low hot sports car.
It looks crazy usable compared to my Elise, But that is so extreme comparative to normal cars.
So is anything.
So, yeah. So
shopping trolleys.
So drive the Evora. I also think something not on your list that needs to be on your list. You need to drive the 2005 to 2012, that generation 911. That is the 997 911. You need to at least drive one. Because you can get a nice one for $40,000. And I think that is, I think usability-wise, that 911 is what you think and hope the Evora will be.
I can see that. Yeah.
I love the Evora. I personally would prefer the Evora, but I'm just thinking about this is your only car to do it all. The 911 does it better.
You're not going to walk around to the front of your Evora and think, I've got a huge front.
You're not. You're not.
You don't have that. Yeah.
So I think it's a little more of the usable variant.
Yeah.
I also think because of your BMW love, by the time you get here, a couple years, couldn't you get an M2 for 40, 45?
It's on his list.
I know, that's my top car for George, actually.
That's my top one. I'm glad you said that because, yeah, you've got the cars that could be considered on the lower end of the power scale. So the Miata, the RX-8, S2000, all the stuff that we love. Yes, yes, yes. But after owning the M5 and kind of pursuing something that's just going to put a ridiculous smile, yes, that can be low power. Yes,
of course.
I'm not arguing
absolutely.
That. But with your budget and, like Todd said, once you get back, $45,000? Heck, now that's making me think about, all right.
Look out. No,
I'm past the rear deck on
the
house.
I'm still trying to get you into your winter 928. I was just telling, before we started the podcast, I mentioned to Paul, I said, envision a 928 with mud flaps, and he kind of lit up.
Well, here's why. Side note, George and Sarah, hang on just a minute. Hang on, everybody.
We're off into the Porsche pool. Hang on a second.
I have to say this, but as soon as you said that, I envisioned the safari type of 928. Like what everybody's doing to their 911s, lifting them with the Rothmans, the Rally, the off-road, the mud flaps, and the roof rack. Now imagine that with the 928.
I know.
With the flaps and the knobbies, and I just about had a conniption fit before we started the podcast.
We almost had to just, it was either Paul was going to leave the room or we had to just forget it and go right into the podcast.
I had
just
a moment.
You just really needed a minute.
And then, of course, everybody's sending me photos of, you know, 928s with the ski boxes and the roof racks and bike racks, and I'm going,
there it is.
Okay, that's cool. That's just cool.
There's your new winter car. I'm telling you, I think it's
nobody has done a Safari 928, as far as I know.
I'm sure we'll get photos now.
I hope to. I'd love to see somebody doing it. If somebody's turned it into a lifted Safari type of 928. Oh, okay. I mean, imagine with the PDK and the...
I know. Now you're building a car.
I am.
Whole separate thing. Yeah.
But if I'm going to safari-ize the 928, I have to...
If you had the money and the Porsche parts catalog, I am terrified for what that would behold.
You'd never see me until
we would never
have
see
the build, and then I'd be driving it around. Okay, George and Sarah, rant over.
Back to
it's
you.
Not really a rant, but you know what I mean. I'm coming back to your BMW love, coming back to, I think, 911. Yes, that'd be awesome. Cayman, yes, you'd love a Cayman. But the M2... just stirs me. It just does.
It's a great car for this.
It's
really
excellent.
Good car for
it's usable. It's still the, you know what? I can just tool around in it. Mm-hmm. It's just car.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
But then you light that thing up and you dig deep into it and you're going to be astounded.
Mm-hmm. It is both for sure. It does very, very well.
It is the car on the top of my list. And Sarah, switching over to you, I had thought of, there's a guy actually here south of us.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's down in Heber City. And he's known for just swapping out Chevy LS motors into the J60, the 80s generation Toyota Land Cruisers. He doesn't rebuild them like the Icon.
It's not a
whatever.
Full thing. It's just,
you know,
a swap.
He'll sell them for 18 or whatever. Mm-hmm, it's just Chevy reliable engine in the Land Cruiser, spruce up a few things, go. I'm going, well, that's kind of a nifty idea. You know, he's making it accessible. It's not the Icon precious $300,000 thing. And I thought, okay, but what's the modern equivalent of that? Sarah, based on your recommendations, and after we drove one, I think you need the four-door JL brand new Jeep Wrangler Rubicon.
I thought the exact same thing.
That is your car because of the top, the doors. Mm-hmm. You can hose it out. You can leave it dirty. Mm-hmm. It's got all the modern tech, and it feels that old, sturdy feeling. The bones are there, but it's got so much modern tech, and it's so capable.
Yep. That's funny. That was my exact.
Did you really?
That's my single car for her as well.
That's the one I landed on.
And I only went broader in one place. I'm going to say Wrangler four door because the problem
with the brand new
JL is the fact that if you do everything and you Rubicon it, it's $50,000 before you touched it. That's a lot of this budget.
Yeah.
So you might want to go JK. You might want to go back one gen, get a late JK. You can get a deal on it, get a four-door of that.
Good. You could.
It's. I mean, look, I like the JL. They've made some nice changes. It is in some ways a big leap, but it's the same reality.
Did we just kind of blow their budget if one's 45, call it 45, 50 for Sarah and George is getting his $45,000 M2.
I'm going to assume that's completely impossible. But that's the thing. If you really had 35 grand to spend and you went shopping Jeep, four-door Jeep Wranglers, you would find a lot of options. They're not going to be the absolute latest JL, but a lot of options otherwise. Incredibly capable. And here's the thing about the Wrangler now. You can go off into Rubicon land and it becomes incredibly capable off-roader, or you can back it off and you keep a lot of that feel, but it comes a lot more comparatively of a road car. Mm-hmm. The tires get less aggressive. The suspension is a little less hardcore.
True, you could.
And so what I feel like your wife's just a truck girl.
Yeah.
And so,
yeah,
okay, sure. Sarah, let's get you a truck. So four-door Jeep Wrangler, whatever you can actually afford to get. I agree with you, Paul. I think that is the call.
I was going round and round with Raptors and like NATO spec Mercedes G-Wagons and Range Rovers.
Well,
and then I thought, no.
You bring it up. The Raptor's worth driving, but the Raptor is, at the end of the day, a pickup. And I think she wants an SUV.
Yeah, agreed.
And the fact that we're talking about, you know, usable, bang around, boxy, take panels off, Wrangler.
Exactly.
Wrangler. There we are. I mean, Land Cruisers work, I get it, but just Wrangler gets it done.
Exactly. Well, that leads us to social media questions. And guys, if you've got your own car debate, please write to us. We say this all the time. EverydayDriverTV@gmail.com, or you can find us on the contact button under the About tab on the EverydayDriver.com website.
Yes,
right,
you can,
there.
Yeah.
So either way, write to us. We'd love to hear your debate. George and Sarah, thank you for writing in. You've got homework, and please let us know what happens. Let us know what you think. All right, so there's some questions about this latest Porsche 911 reimagined by Singer Williams DLS car that dropped at the Goodwood Festival of Speed, whose designer was Daniel Simon of Tron, Oblivion.
Oh, sure, of course.
He's the designer that did a whole bunch of stuff. Also did the NVIDIA-powered autonomous robocar that went up the hill at Goodwood as well.
Mm-hmm.
But thinking about all this, yes, it's set everybody on their ear. Everybody was already completely over the moon about Singer 911s or the Porsche 911 reimagined by Singer.
Which is just, that's just
everybody
too
just
long
call
to
it
say.
The Singer
that's
911.
That's just too
long
to say.
We
Moving
know
on,
that,
yeah.
what it is. But everybody has just drooled and fawned over this car, and rightfully so.
It's very cool.
They've
it's
done a lot of details, put a lot of design work. Yes, I want this. But thinking about this has brought me to two thoughts. And that is, first of all, if you've got a car like this, you almost have an obligation to car people to share it, to bring it out and get in front of them. Not to just let everybody drive it. That's not what I'm saying.
No.
But just get it out in public and show it off.
Mm-hmm.
Not tuck it away in private collections and garages.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is that thing.
You have that obligation.
Agreed. This is that thing that Ford is trying mostly kind of successfully, I'm not sure, to do with the Ford GT, is they had everybody apply as who are you going to be that was going to drive it. Now, I don't know that I agree with some of the choices of the people that they gave the car to, but theoretically, their driving force was, pardon the pun, to get the car into hands of not collectors with a warehouse, but people who drive their cars.
Which has still happened. It's
of course,
still going on.
And it
on.
Will continue to happen.
Yeah.
But they wanted to get it in the hands of people that were actually going to drive the car because they wanted the car out in the public. I wish that was a requirement here, but I think all of these are going to vanish.
Yeah, I mean, if you haven't seen them, they've announced 75 cars for $1.8 million each. Insane. They're gorgeous. But
how long, honestly, is that going to take Stinger to build? 75 cars? They are not fast.
But that's fine, because it'll just keep them in business. They'll keep the money flowing.
For
who cares?
Yeah. Anyway.
But the second thing is the remanufacturing thing. How everybody says, you know, they don't build them like they used to. Or, you know, what if a blank car company brought back blank old model and started making those again?
Yeah.
Remember what Nissan and Datsun did with the 240Z or the 280Z?
Mm-hmm.
They started doing some remanufacturing of these cars, even though the price got a little high.
Yeah.
But what if some of these manufacturers or private individuals started doing the thing like I mentioned with the Land Cruiser, just dropping Chevy motors into them and they run? But how about, you know, instead of iconizing everything, let's just do it for like the Chevy K5 Blazer.
Interesting.
Great.
That's what you're doing.
Spruce it up. And they're not builds specifically for auction where they're just too precious and they're, but were bringing cars back and putting them old cars back on the road that everybody loved.
Safety nightmare, but super fun.
I'm telling you, everything from the 80s BMW lineup and most of the 90s, this could be done with. What if we had we singerized or iconized these cars and think of other manufacturers and models. I mean, we could go old pickup trucks. We could.
Who's the person that can put a GTR engine in the 90s 300ZX?
I mean, that would be an expensive build. I was thinking Acura NSX. What if the Singer version of the Acura NSX?
Sure. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
People would crawl out of their skin to get all over that car.
Bring it. Yeah, it'd be amazing.
I mean, just think of the cool things that we could do. But again, backing way off to an affordable price land, 30, 40,000-ish, somewhere in there of, hey, this cool old thing, and I'm driving it again because it's got modern features and some modern tech in it,
yeah,
and it's awesome, and I love it, and old cars back on the road.
The Civic Type R has more power than the Acura NSX.
That's insane.
That motor in the original Acura NSX, you've actually given it a power bump.
Oh, that's insane.
Yeah, it is. It's nuts.
And it's down to a turbo 4 instead of 6.
Now, I'm not saying that's the answer. I'm just thinking about this is how what has happened with power.
Heck, that engine and anything, actually.
In the nuts? It's really crazy. Wow. Speaking of these kind of cars, Lucas wrote in on Facebook and said, what car is the modern equivalent of the S2000?
Oh, great question.
And ideally with a hard top roof.
I have two. Okay.
The obvious one that I think has to be mentioned is the current Miata MX-5 RF.
Okay. Yeah.
It's not the same, but it's similar in many, many ways.
Sure, I could see
that. It's a great roadster. It does have a full top. It's got good tech. I mean, when the S2000 dropped, it was a roadster with a surprising amount of cutting-edge tech in the cabin, just a nice cabin. I mean, it far eclipsed the Miata cabin at the same time. Mm-hmm. It was just a really, really nice cabin. So I think the RF is similar, but similar going the other way is, I think, the hardtop BMW Z4s.
Ooh.
I think balance-wise, they feel kind of similar to the S2000, but they are heavier. They definitely feel heavier.
A lot more power.
But I think those are related as well. So those two cars, neither one of them really does the S2000 thing. We've already talked about Honda from the 90s in this podcast, but I think both of them, you can see that car from there. I think they're both similar enough.
Well, there's a question on Instagram over here from Ovent Brello, which asks, which cars are the best sleepers? And, you know, the comment is all about Chevy SSs, and yes, they're pretty loud, and they don't sleep, quote-unquote, as well as a Buick Regal GS, which is interesting. But which cars are the best sleepers or surprise people the most? And, you know, you're right. We could make an episode out of that idea. And I started out with the Jeep Grand Cherokee Trackhawk. Nobody expects a Jeep Grand Cherokee to laser beam past.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah.
But then I thought, okay, what about, you know, all the Mercedes AMG cars, debadged?
Yeah. Yeah.
Very much sleepers. Mm-hmm. But then I threw that out the window because for the modern day equivalent, it's electric cars.
Oh.
Nobody's thought of
I see that.
Any electric car. I don't care if it's a Leaf or a Volt.
Mm-hmm.
You've got acceleration that people aren't expecting.
Whatever you're driving that's all electric, it can be the Leaf. You're leaving the light first.
Yeah.
Whatever you're in. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I was originally thinking, okay, first maybe some swaps. You know, the like you said, the Civic motor, the Civic Type R motor in the NSX or whatever.
Yeah.
And they'd have to be custom builds. But then, no, Dodge is kind of doing that already, and they're throwing that Hellcat motor in just about everything they can get their hands on.
That's a big hood.
I hope that they do it with their huge pickup trucks next.
Probably.
Drop the Hellcat in that, because...
Of course it'll happen. Yeah, of course it'll happen. Yeah.
But then, yeah, electric cars are up there with the... The electric car can do that? I knew electrics were cool, and I was thinking green and clean and all that stuff, but how about just for a hot rod?
Yeah, sure.
Electric cars.
I see that for sure. We've kind of walked around this question a couple of times. Nick wrote in and said, if we were all required to have an LS swapped car in our life, money no object, required to have an LS swapped car,
this.
What would you do?
Ooh, I know what you'd do.
Yeah, I mean, my first one, and I've got to think of another one because I think my first one is obvious, but I would do a really great LS swap in the FRS 86 chassis. I would love that. That's the Corvette I want in my life, that one right there.
Yeah,
I can see that. There's got to be others. What else is on your brain?
Well, 928 could easily swallow an LS.
Yeah, you mentioned that earlier. That 928 would be great. Yeah.
That could be good. I'm trying to think. Yeah, it'd be European for sure. It'd be small and European. Sure. I mean, we've got the Flying Miatas. We've got the Monster Miatas already, mm-hmm. which is pretty cool. But I'm thinking something hot. How about the Z06 motor in the 928 or something?
Whoa.
Yeah.
A 920. Hang on. That's double the horsepower of the one you had. Double. 650 horsepower and torque.
It wasn't slow.
In a car that was already genuinely fast.
What's crazy is my 928 had 316 horsepower out of a 5-liter V8.
I know.
My Cayman's got 340 mm-hmm. out of a 3.4-liter
But the Z06 motor in that 928 would double the horsepower. Double it.
Yeah.
That is absolute utter madness. It's fantastic madness, but it's utter madness.
Yeah. Maybe, I don't know, small cars or some SUVs that need power.
What about, honestly, I didn't think about this till this moment. What about an LS in an Evora?
Mm.
That would be difficult from a packaging perspective, and I think you would probably lose what storage you have.
You'd lose your back seats is what you'd do because of the transmission to reconfigure.
I think it's probably more possible to lose your trunk space, such as it is, than your back seat. But either way, you're going to lose some storage, I suspect. You're going to lose some space in that car. Mm. But you go from a car that is around 400 horsepower because it's got a supercharger on a Camry motor to a car. Let's go Z06 there. Let's not for a second. Let's just do the non-supercharged. Normal 450, 460 horsepower, big old
rocket.
V8 LS in that. In a war. That'd be crazy. That'd be an interesting and hard build, but fun.
It's interesting because the Esprit did that at the end of its life with the Esprit V8.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it just seems like low tire, ripe for power bumps.
So many little motors in that car. Crazy number of motors, yeah.
Hmm. Well, there's a question on Instagram. Fab63 asks us, what are our thoughts on Mercedes working on a Cayman competitor? Imagine that, a small Mercedes.
Believe it when I see it.
And Maserati targeting the remaining Porsche models.
Maserati's got to do something. Maserati, warning, Maserati rant is coming. I'm giving the floor to Paul.
It's only up from here for Maserati, let's be honest. But for Mercedes working on a Cayman competitor, I say lovely. I think Mercedes has room to bring back something small, luxurious.
Agreed.
And possibly, if they're game, a manual transmission.
What about
possibly?
Imagine the GTS, okay, which we both love.
Yeah,
imagine that stepping down to be a Cayman competitor. What is the cheaper version of that idea from Mercedes?
Because smaller,
the
cheaper.
GTS is fantastic as a 911 Camaro.
Yeah,
it's a really alternative to the 911.
Brilliant,
really,
car.
Really fun car. But what if they stepped that down and back in price, and now it's sitting there at around 60 or 70, and is targeting the Cayman. I will believe it when I see it, but it is a fascinating idea.
That'd be really interesting. I love the future spawning ideas like this and car companies kind of realizing, we can keep doing this because I think niche is the key word from here on out because everybody's going to want such a particular thing and car companies are going to be willing to build. I think BMW is kind of leading the way in not only executing that, but thinking, well, everybody's going to want some kind of small electric, and then they're going to want a big electric car, and now they're going to want a nine-row SUV.
Nine-row SUV.
Not nine-passenger, nine rows.
Nine-row SUV.
You know what I mean.
I bought a train. You look, see my train?
Here's my train. It's huge and ugly and enormous, and they're going to sell the daylights out of them.
Yeah, for sure. I've got a last one from Instagram. It's Thomas Hall on Thomas Hall 10 writing to me. He says, Todd, what would be the ultimate climber car?
Oh,
he describes
it
as a climber dirtbag car. I read that to say this, Thomas, that you're imagining money no object, build the perfect car that can go to every climbing crag you can imagine and is still an enthusiast car. This is hard because some of the climbing crags are not down nice roads. Some of them are down brilliant roads. Some of them are down terrible roads. So it's got to be versatile.
Mm, sure.
Okay. Here's where I go. Pick how much money you can spend in this scenario. But it is the Rally Eyes 911.
Ooh.
You either get the really cheap, you buy the old one, you get the really cheap one, and you do the Lee Keen's done it, and Matt's doing it to his.
Totally.
You do a little lift kit, and the knobbies, and the big soft suspension, but they're chuckable, and they drift, and that kind of stuff. But yet you've still got frunk storage and backseat storage for gear. Okay? Let's be honest. Your climbing gear, it's not a sport without gear, but it is all gear you have to carry.
Yeah,
you got to bring it. It's not ridiculous about, you know, the amount of gear. You're not hauling, you know, trucks of gear because you have to carry it all into the crag and you have to climb with it. Exactly. But so it's one of the things where it's probably all going to fit in a couple of backpacks.
Yeah.
So between your frunk and the back seat, done. If you can step up to recent, imagine a current, because of how much bigger and nicer they've gotten, a current 911 4S done rally.
Dude.
Full body paint protection film, 4S system rocking.
Dude.
Take that down a back road. You've got bumps. You don't care. But the road's fast. You still don't care.
Oh.
It does that body roll like, you know, the aerial nomad?
Oh, yeah.
The knobby thing with the big body roll. Yeah, you know what I mean? It's that kind of idea while you sit in luxury.
Oh. Sold.
There you go.
I'm done. Wow. All right. Well, last question for me from Seth K. on Facebook. What are our thoughts on buying cars where the company doesn't exist, at least in the U.S., like Saabs and Peugeots? One phrase, and that is marshal your friends to come work on your car. We just saw Lancia Delta Integrale 1989. Yeah, cool. It's not a full-on race car, and as Chance says, and he's right about this, there's no original race cars. Hmm. They replace the parts. It's a race car.
Yeah. If you ever see for sale on the auction block, all original race car, all original based on what?
Yeah, runaway.
If it was ever raced, they did something. Something has been replaced on it.
Of course.
And nobody kept track. They were just like, that needs a new fender. Done.
Exactly. Yeah. All original race car doesn't exist. But this car was Group A sort of a rally test car. So it is a genuine car, but he doesn't know the provenance of it.
Of course he does. It's
badges in 89 and he drives and he says, this car breaks. Marshall, your friends, buddy. And he said, I do all the my own work. And if it needs a part, I have to make it. The baffle and the oil pan. I had to make a sheet metal thing because the other one was done.
And who has one? Nobody.
So he talks to the Lancia people in the UK and Italy and chases that down. But yeah, you've got to have a little bit of a following and some willing friends.
And garage time.
And garage time. Yeah. Friend with a lift.
Yeah. Or one yourself.
Anyway. Wow. Guys, thank you so much for listening, for following along. We've got a crazy couple of weeks finishing things off. Hope you're loving the Velocity seasons as well. And that is coming to Amazon Prime and Vimeo a little bit later. We will definitely announce that when it comes your way.
For sure.
Huge thanks, guys. Really appreciate it. Looking forward to next time. Cheers.